It's good to be back at Hyde Park. First thing is that I was planning to have a slide, and since we're not over in the auditorium, we don't have a projector in here. If you did not pick up a handout, hold your hand up, and I'm going to give you a handout. And on the back is that slide. In a moment, if you want to turn, if you read along, we'll be looking at Matthew 11, 2 through 3, and actually in Matthew 11. Richard really did a good thing here with all who wander, so he's got it kind of twisted. Not saying he's twisted, but well, that's debatable. Okay. One thing I did want to say, though, is that, as has already been mentioned, my first preaching job was here in 1983 to 1985. And I came in with flaming, burnt orange hair. I didn't even have to color it. It was natural. But I came in calling the hogs. I was born in Arkansas, and I was not ever going to become a UT fan. And Sill Hair and Lori Hair really, and I wore this today for Sill Hair, because she was convinced to convert me to become a Longhorn. And my conversion experience happened here. Not to Jesus, but to the Longhorns happened here. And I've been hooking them ever since. Hey, two visitors that know that. Good. I just want to say to those of you who were here during that period, Wayne and I have wonderful memories. We were only here 2 years, but our second daughter was born here. Lori Hare babysat our oldest daughter when she was about 3 years old. And the first time we let Lori babysit Alicia, when we came home, she had her doing hook'em horns. And I was not pleased. I was trying to teach her to call the hogs. But our experience here was right up there with another experience as far as our church work, and that was at the Granbury Church up near Fort Worth. We were there close to 15 years. But the way we were treated here, and especially as a brand new minister, and all the mistakes that a new minister makes, this church nurtured us as well as a person could ever be nurtured. And we will always hold this church dear. I walked through the auditorium today and back down the hall where my office was. Good memories. And those will always be good memories. Even with the doors going to be closed here, that's sad. But what this church has done through the years is amazing. For those that are visiting, when I was here, we were having about 350 over here. But before that, James told me to see, what, 550? Back in the 60s and 70s, there were 550 in attendance. The world changed, things changed, and that happens to churches sometimes. But I just want to encourage you to not feel bad, because a lot of things were done here and continue to be done here that are very important in the work of the gospel. All right, Matthew 11, verses 2 and 3. When John heard in prison what Christ was doing, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else?" John the Baptist is in prison, and it's not where he wanted to be. But John was speaking out, because he had told Herod, and when you start using the word Herod, it gets pretty convoluted in the New Testament. There were a lot of Herods. This is Herod Antipas, one of the sons of Herod the Great. John was speaking out against Herod, possibly at two levels. We know one level, and one level was that he was speaking out against Herod because he had married a relative of his named Herodias. And you might know that story. Herodias figured in to John ultimately being beheaded. John said, "It's not right for you to have Herodias, because she's your sister-in-law and she's also your niece." That's how mixed up the Herod family was. And John spoke out against it, and speaking out against a ruler can really bring problems to the ones who's speaking. So John was put in prison by Herod Antipas, and John was sort of cooling his heels there, and he didn't want to be cooling his heels. Those of you who know the story of John the Baptist know that he was fiery. He preached a type of fire and brimstone sermons when he was out. And people were drawn to him, and Herod didn't particularly like it because it was causing him to get some bad press. And you know how politicians do when they get bad press. It doesn't make them real happy. And Herod Antipas wasn't happy. So here John is, cooling his heels in Herod's prison and wondering, where's Jesus? Jesus is supposed to be doing some mighty great things. I'm supposed to be part of that. But I'm not. Where's Jesus? I believe that John was doing something like what we have on the board here. He was doing a little bit of wandering. Because when he was there in prison, he was wondering what's going on. This is a quote from Tolkien. You may know that one. Not all who wander are lost. Okay, at least some recognize that. Yeah, a lot recognize that. Okay, in our garage, I have a banner posted with this on it. All who wander are not lost. It's to remind Lane anytime we go out that we might get off the beaten path and that we might wind up somewhere that she did not expect to go. And I think John is doing some wandering in his mind there in prison. When we were in Granbury, Granbury's built on a lake, and when we lived here, Brent Hollingsworth used to take me out in his boat, and Lane's dad had a boat, and I always wanted a boat, and it wasn't looking good as a preacher that I would ever own a boat, but we managed to buy a boat in Granbury. And what I love to do, because at that church, I was preaching two sermons in the morning and then coming back and doing another one in the evening. I am what is called a social introvert. I'm social, but it's hard on me. And I would get peopled out on Sundays, everybody wanting to talk to the preacher, doing the three sermons and so forth. Lane and I would get in that boat and just start drifting. Motor was running, but I mean, I love to wander up into the coves and so forth. Well, one Sunday, some of the young couples heard that we had a boat and what we did on Sunday nights. And remember, I got peopled out. And they invited themselves to go with us. And they wanted to see parts of the lake that they had never seen, so I was going up into those. And we were doing great until it got dark. Because up in one of those coves, and I knew this one was dangerous because of the stumps in it and so forth, when it gets dark, you don't have all the signposts that you had before. The places that can help you get perspective and know where you're going. And I was going in circles because, you know, real men don't ask for directions. And finally, one of the guys up in the front of the boat said, "Stan, are we lost?" And I said, "No." He said, "Stan, are you lost?" With emphasis on you. And I said, "No, but I don't know where we are." Yeah. And he finally said, "We've got to go over to that house because there's a guy out and get directions." The guy gave us directions and we got out. But I was wandering that evening, originally knowing where I was going, but when I lost the signpost that gave me directions, like a tree here or a house over here, and I couldn't see them, it was just wandering then. And there's a difference in wandering, aimlessly or with purpose. John had a definite purpose, but now he's wondering, is Jesus on target? Why isn't Jesus coming and breaking me out? John knew that Jesus was the Messiah, and there were all types of hopes for the Messiah. Not all of them agreed with one another. But John was thinking, if Jesus is the Messiah and he had read the prophets of all the things that the Messiah was going to do. If you will, look down with me to verse 4. Matthew 11, verse 4. Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Blessed is the man who does not fall away on account of me." Those are messianic reference points. But Jesus left one thing out of what he says in Isaiah, or what is said in Isaiah 61. Because one of the things that is said in Isaiah 61 is the Messiah is going to release the captives. He's going to break those out of prison who are in prison. And Jesus does not include this in this message that he sends back to John. So what does that indicate? John, you're not going to get out of prison, but you're still within God's will and God's purposes. And even though your mind is wandering everywhere right now, you are still in the direction that God has called you to go. All right, John's there in prison. What about us? Do you ever feel like we as a country are wandering? Or that we in the church don't really have a place within this particular social circumstances that we are in right now? In retirement, Lane and I have gotten involved with a group called Academy 4 that works in elementary schools, Title I schools, where it's very impoverished people, students. In our work there, we go on to a campus once a month and spend about 3 hours on that campus doing different things to get to know students and ultimately their families. When we first went on an Austin campus, though, we were not welcomed by some of the teachers. In fact, they were very suspicious of us. Christians on a public school campus, what are you doing here? And it was clear some of them did not want us on that campus. We rolled with that. But suspicion can also turn to hostility. Look at your handout. Any of you know the name Tim Keller? I guess not. Okay. Tim Keller was a preacher at a church in New York City. He primarily aimed at working with those that are called nuns. They don't have any religious affiliation. The unchurched and the dechurched. Primarily young people, like some of our visitors here today, that many of them were critical of the Christian faith, but somewhat interested. Keller, as he worked in that environment, discovered that people aren't always welcoming of what the church has to say. But he says that our country has become so divided, and I want you to look at this handout that I gave you. And this is exactly how I pulled it off of a shot on one of the websites. And the blue and red was put in there. I didn't put it there. But I think it is making a political statement as well, because blue represents one party, red represents another party. He says that those on the right side who will be pro-life and emphasize sexual ethics will often be seen by those on the left side as being very conservative and overly conservative. However, those on the left side who promote racial justice and care for the poor are seen as very liberal by these on the right side. And they are suspicious of one another. And that's the divide that we have in our country. But that divide is not in the church. It should not be in the church. Because every one of these four quadrants, and the four quadrants are only representative. He's not saying these are the only issues in our country that the church is faced with. But he is saying that these are representative. And that in the church, we ought to be concerned about all four of these things. And that they ought to be not divisive for us, but to draw us together. But what he was seeing in his church was that if he took a stand on either side, he was either getting picketed or called out by a group on the other side, not within his church, but within the community. And we see a lot of criticism of the church today within the world because it won't line up on one side or the other. And you don't have to go very far in Austin to find churches that will line up on either side of this divide. And that's the world that we live in. Feel like we're wandering sometimes? That the signposts that we used to have are no longer there? When I was a child, the blue laws were still in effect. Anybody recognize blue laws? Okay. Blue laws were written so it protected the church and protected Sundays. That businesses could not open, very few businesses could open. It was surprising to me where I grew up in Texarkana, Arkansas, there was a cafeteria called Bryce's Cafe. It could be open on Sunday, whereas most restaurants were not. How they got it, I don't know, but it was because that's where nearly every church member in Texarkana went. In fact, the preacher was under a lot of pressure. Get us out before the Baptist and Methodist so we can get there ahead of them to have lunch. But anyway, those laws were there and it propped up the church. That's no longer there for us. And in fact, I'm not even for sure it was good for us. Because we are living in a world more like the first Christians lived in and having to find out how we're going to make our stand there. All right, now let's come back to John. Notice verse 7 and following. As John's disciples were leaving, and I hope they were in earshot of what Jesus is about to say. As John's disciples were leaving, Jesus began to speak to the crowd about John. What did you go out into the desert to see? A reed swayed by the wind? If not, what did you go out to see? A man dressed in fine clothes? No, those who wear fine clothes are in kings' palaces. Then what did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, and I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, I will send my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way before you. I tell you the truth, among those born of women there is not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet he who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcefully advancing, and forceful men lay hold of it. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John, and if you are willing to accept it, he is Elijah who was to come. He who has ears, let him hear. I think this is a very important line. It's not original to me, but I think it's a very important line. Even though John was starting to have doubts about Jesus, Jesus had none about John. Because John had come and done what he was called to come and do. And even though when John was looking at Jesus at this point in his ministry and thinking, this doesn't sound right, this doesn't even look right, Jesus was letting him know, it is right, John, and what you have done is right, and I don't have any doubts about you. One thing about John was he taught a message that included judgment. I think there was grace there as well. But Jesus brought a perfect balance between judgment and grace. When I was teaching homiletics at the last part of my career, homiletics is a high-level word for the preparation and delivery of sermons. So I was teaching preachers. And one of the preaching students was asked one day, what did you get out of Stan's class? He said, well, the main thing I got is I'm going to hell if I don't preach grace. He didn't get exactly what I said. I had told them that they would get an F if their sermon did not end with grace. It should have judgment in it. Because I believe that is what John and what Jesus and what Paul did. They preached a word of judgment, but it ended with a word of grace. The students sort of got it. But Jesus got it. And I remember that time that the woman was brought before him, and she had been caught in adultery, and she was condemned. And finally, all the people were leaving because Jesus had spoken in a way that was gracious and hopeful. And when they were all gone, Jesus said, "Where are your accusers?" She says, "They're gone." He said, "Neither do I condemn you." And then what was the second part? "Go and sin no more." Judgment, grace. And that's what Jesus came doing. I think that's what Tim Keller was doing in New York City. And I think that's what the church today is called to do and be. All of these things that can divide us, we do what Jesus called John to do, and that is come back and listen to him and follow him. All who wander are not lost. Wayne and I go to a place in Colorado every year that the Kearns go. In fact, I've got a beef with Perry. There's a place we've always enjoyed going to, but the road is so bad now that you typically get a flat or two going up it. So I won't go up it. I don't own a Jeep. Jeeps can make it. Perry told us about a place to rent a Jeep next year, and then he sent pictures of where we would be going, and the cliffs, I mean, are incredibly far down, or the bottom is. And he made sure Lane saw that, who does not enjoy rides like that. But we will be going back there. I may have to blindfold her, but we'll be going back there. Anyway, our last trip up there, when we could still get up there, I found some beaver dams, and I love to fly fish. And the little brookie trout were just breaking like everything. And I kept fishing and fishing and fishing, and then it got dark, and guess what? Coming down the mountain, I didn't have the signpost. I didn't know what turns to make, and I got lost. And real men don't ask for directions. But we passed one camp of hunters, and I said, "I'm going to have to go get directions." So we pulled in and noticed one guy coming out, and he goes to his pickup and reaches in, and he comes out with this, and I said, "He's got a handgun." So I got my hands out and said, "Can you help a dumb Texan find his way out of here?" "Oh, yeah, I can do that." So the gun didn't come out. But anyway, he gave me the directions, and I got back down. Wandering can be aimless, but wandering can have a direction. And in the world that we live in, it can seem like there's not good signposts. There's not directions. But if we can come back to a chart like this and realize that those should not be things that divide us, but things that we can hold together, because these things come from the very things that Jesus emphasized, we will find our way. And there will not be things that will divide us, and these will not be things that leave us hopeless. Jesus came to bring us hope, and we still live within that. And I thank God that Northside, as it was in 1926 and later, was here in this place at that time. And God bless you as you find your way, as this place closes, that you will be where you will be following Jesus. And even though it may feel like you're wandering right now, there's the assurance that not all who wander are lost. So we're going to sing this song. Do y'all have the invitation here?
Yes.
Okay, if anybody needs to respond to the invitation, you can come as we stand and sing.